The inhabitants of the ville were seated at two long tables that ran along the wooden walls, with a shorter table laid crosswise at the head. Every seat seemed to be filled, though Ryan noticed immediately that males and females were strictly segregated, men to the right and women to the left. Only the smaller top table held a mix of both the sexes.
All young.
All young.
Yehu had taken his own carved chair at the center of the high table. There were already four or five men and women with him, along with eight empty seats, waiting for Dorothy and for the seven friends.
Welcome, Outlanders. Come in and sit and receive the hospitality of Quindley.
Ryan checked automatically what kind of weapons the young people were wearing. Most had knives sheathed at their belts, but only one or two seemed to be carrying hand blasters. But what was most noticeable was the reactions to their presence in the dining room, revealed on every face at every table, a mixture of curiosity and vague dislike. But here and there was the clearest expression of something that went a whole lot further than dislike. The animosity was voiced before they even walked halfway around the room, behind Dorothy, toward the vacant seats at the top table.
It's not right, Yehu!
Old Outlanders are permitted in Quindley.
Was Moses asked, Yehu?
This time the speaker rose to his feet, a slender boy, who looked to be about 17, with a squint in his right eye.
Of course, Donnie. Would I admit strangers without the consent of Moses?
A woman, heavily pregnant, also stood up, pointing with a wooden ladle at Doc.
What of him, Yehu? What of that obscene sight?
Madam, I might be many things, but I would suggest that obscene is not properly one of them.
Two from seven only would pass the test.
The first person to have spoken finally rose to his feet to reveal himself to everyone. His hair was cropped short, and he wore a pale blue bandana knotted around his forehead. He pointed a bony forefinger directly toward Doc.
Enough, Jimmy! You shall not go against the command of Moses.
This is blasphemy, Yehu!
You can argue this in council.
When?
Two nights from now.
Too late!
Jimmy pushed his way from the table and stalked toward the Outlanders, his fingers brushing the hilt of his knife. Ryan, Christie, and JB all drew their guns, covering the lad.
Not unless we have to.
Yehu jumped over the table with a casual athletic ease, his right hand clutching a narrow, glittering blade.
Moses will make you pay the price, Jimmy!
Fuck that! Fuck Moses, and fuck you, Oldie!
Jimmy moved so quickly that he took everyone, including Ryan, by surprise. He threw his knife with a deadly, practiced underhand flick, the polished steel slicing across the hall toward Doc's throat. It was Michael Brother who saved Doc's life. As casually as if he were plucking a hovering fly from the still summer air, Michael reached out his right hand. He took the throw knife by the hilt when it was less than a yard from Doc's neck. He held it for a moment, then dropped it by his feet.
No.
You fucking traitor!
Shall I chill him?
No, wait.
For a few heartbeats, it seemed like everything was balanced on the edge of a razor. Half the young men and women were up on their feet, most with their own knives drawn. One wrong move now, and there would be serious blood spilling. It was Yehu who defused the moment. Moving cat-footed, he walked behind the paralyzed Jimmy, placed an arm around his shoulders, almost like an old playmate at the end of a day's sport, and cut his throat. Yehu pushed the twitching corpse away from him, letting it drop to the crimsoned planks.
He shouted traitor to us all. But Jimmy was the real traitor here. A traitor to us all, a traitor to Moses, a traitor to Quindley.
Put your blasters away. You done good, Michael.
The teenager simply stared at him, his eyes blank and incurious.
I owe you my life, Master Brother. Better than owing Asculapius a cockerel. It is a debt that I shall always stand ready to honor, whensoever you feel the need to call upon me, Michael. And where...
All right, Doc. Only caught the knife is all. Didn't know the poor kid was going to end up like a butchered steer in the shambles.
Yehu stooped and wiped his blood-slicked blade on the dead boy's shirt, carefully avoiding daubing his boots with the spreading pool of crimson.
Come and eat now, Outlanders. I give you my deep sorrow that our ville was so shamed.
Yehu turned and pointed to a couple of the youngest-looking lads at the table to the right.
Remove what was Jimmy, then we will inter him, properly, tomorrow after the dawning.
I seem to have lost some of my appetite, lover.
Despite the horrific outburst of savage violence, the evening meal carried on almost as though nothing had happened. The boy was dragged out, leaving a dark, glistening smear behind. Immediately, the doors were closed again, and Yehu clapped his hands to order the food brought in. It was carried by several of the younger women on platters of turned beechwood and hand-thrown pottery. Large bowls were placed at intervals along all the tables, and everyone helped themselves to the steaming mix of vegetables. Ryan noticed that the cutlery on the top table was matching steel, but the rest of the people were making do with a makeshift collection of plastic and cheap metal. Ryan was seated on the right hand of Yehu, with Christy on the other side of the Vill's leader. Doc sat next to Ryan, with an empty chair yawning conspicuously at his right. The rest of them were spaced out along the high table, with Dorothy sitting between Dean and Michael. The food was excellent, with a richness and diversity that was more than enough to dispel even Doc's proclaimed reservations about vegetarian eating. There were delicious creamed carrots mixed in with nutty, macerated celery, buttered leeks with slices of lightly fried turnips decorating the top of the dish, potatoes in all shapes, sizes, and varieties, roasted in their skins or mashed up with tiny shreds of cooked red cabbage, curling heads of kale with deep-fried wafers of potato piled around them, baked potatoes slashed open with melting knobs of tray butter and sea salt. There were at least a dozen kinds of bread, some of it with little pieces of apple and pear baked into it, soda bread with a dozen dishes of jelly, rolls so fresh they almost burned the tongue and melted in the mouth. There was elderflower wine to drink, with apple juice and cold, pure water. As soon as some of the dishes began to empty, the young women brought in fresh bowls, until the table seemed to groan under the weight. To follow the meal, there were custards and a range of fresh fruits, including delicious golden melons. Ryan hadn't realized just how hungry he'd been, but he had to ease his belt out a couple of notches. Only when the first overwhelming pangs had been satisfied did Ryan embark on a cautious talk with Yehu.
Real ace on the line, meal. Moses responsible for that as well?
Moses is responsible for everything within the Vill of Quinley. For everything and for every person. We are what we are because of Moses.
Will we meet him?
No.
Unless he chooses to let you speak with him.
Speak with him or see him?
Oh, only speak. Nobody sees Moses. I thought you had been told that.
Ryan glanced around the room, noticing that Doc was still the center of attention, though the young men and women of the Vill seemed to be under orders to try not to stare at him, orders that they were finding difficult to obey.
Yehu?
What is it?
Your Vill has babies and children?
Yes, of course. Or we would all die out.
But you have no old people here.
Ah, you have observed this.
I'd have to be triple stoop not to. Doesn't seem to be a single man or woman over the age of about 30 or so.
Younger.
Younger? How much younger?
Nobody in Quinley ever lives beyond their 25th birthing day.
25? Yeah, I can believe that. But what happened to all the older men and women here?
They were translated to a different place. So Moses teaches us.
Dead.
Outlanders would say that the oldest have died. We do not always say so.
Some virus, is it, Yehu? A sickness?
A sickness, Christy?
Well, there has to be a reason why there's nobody over the age of 25, Yehu. People don't just die on their 25th birthday.
Yes, they do.
Are you telling us what I think you're telling us? Nobody old in the whole Vill because you chill them?
Of course we do. Oh, I know what you think. The ways of many outland Vills are different. We know that. Moses has explained how there is no wisdom beyond our lands. That is why we don't normally allow strangers in. Unless they... But let that pass. Dorothy said you'd helped with the stickies and finding the body of Jolien, brother to Isaac. So in the ways ordained by Moses, we take you in and feed you. Let you rest before going on your journey.
Are my old ears betraying me, my dear Ryan? Or did that slip of a child say they killed everyone once they reached the age of 25?
No, Doc. You heard right.
And that explains the hostility to me. I must seem like some Methuselah to them.
Who was Methuselah, Doc?
Oldest man in the Bible. He was... By the three Kennedys, Ryan. But I think that we should not linger long in this place.
Yehu stood up and rapped on the oak table with the hilt of his spoon, waiting until the dining hall fell silent.
Brothers and sisters, the meal is done. And as we follow the path of Moses, we shall now retire to meditate on the day and to rest. Our guests will retire to their quarters. They are the guests of Quinley and of Moses. They will not be harmed and will be shown respect. despite most of them being oldies.
Ryan looked around the room as the young leader made his short speech. He saw every face turned toward the top table, with most eyes averted from the wrinkled face of Doc, avoiding JB, Mildred, Christy, and himself. But many of them, particularly the younger women, were staring at Dean and at Michael with something that seemed to approach a kind of hunger. Both Michael and Dean had been tucking into the excellent meal with every show of enjoyment, but they had also been listening intently to whatever it was that Dorothy had been saying to them. And that worried Ryan. It was a mild night, with a sky like black velvet, sprinkled with brilliant stars. Frank and Ray had guided them back to their quarters. Michael and Dean lagged behind. Before being shepherded into the divided hut, Ryan and Christy embraced and kissed, as did JB and Mildred. The two young men of Quindley scarcely bothered to conceal their disgust.
Bad enough having oldies in the Ville without 666 sexing like this.
You want to be careful, Sonny, or I'll come and kiss you when you aren't looking, and you'll get to be old and wrinkled like me, just like that. So watch your little shit mouth.
Once they were alone, Ryan sat on his bed and beckoned his 11-year-old son to him.
I want to have a word with you, Dean.
What?
The torches were beginning to smoke and gutter, and someone had placed an ancient brass oil lamp on the central table, which bathed the room in a gentle golden glow. But it didn't give enough light for Ryan to be able to see properly what was going on in the boy's face.
Speak to me, Dean.
What about?
He wished that Christy were there. With her semi-mutie power, she was amazingly sensitive to what people said, and more importantly, to the way in which they said it. She would have heard things in Dean's voice that Ryan could only begin to guess at.
What did Dorothy say to you and Michael during the meal?
Nothing much.
What? She was talking all the way through.
What do you want to know, Dad?
The small vein was beginning to tick in Ryan's temple, the inexorable sign that he was on the verge of losing his temper. Dean was deliberately concealing something from him. He didn't know what, and he didn't know why.
I ask the questions and you answer them. We're in a strange ville. Double strange. Anything that you've been told could be a help to working out if there's any sort of danger for any of us. All right?
Dad, I'm real tired. Dorothy didn't say nothing about stuff like you just said. Nothing like that. Now, is it all right if I go to bed?
The boy's whole body language was shouting out a stubborn resistance. Ryan had a momentary temptation to slap him senseless, but he struggled and overcame it, knowing it would do no good, except in terms of relieving some of his own feelings.
Sure. Go to bed, son.
Before he settled in for the night, Ryan spoke to Doc and JB about Quindley. The fact that Quindley deliberately butchered anyone who passed their 25th birthday hadn't really come as that much of a surprise. They had all noticed the extreme youth of everyone in the well-ordered Ville.
Did they explain why they followed this barbarous practice?
We never got around to talking about why they did it, Doc.
They have shown us some courtesy, and the one they call Yehu, aided by young Michael here, most certainly saved my life. But who knows how they might feel tomorrow? I have not encountered such overt hostility since I addressed a meeting of young female students in 1888 and opposed the idea that they should ever be allowed to vote.
Best not let Mildred hear you admit that argument, Doc. Likely to find you got your balls nailed to the wall.
Well, the truth is, I was never actually opposed to the idea of universal suffrage. I only did it to annoy my dear Emily and draw attention to myself. And it worked well. She was so delighted to have the chance to persuade a young male chauvinist to her views that we spent many late hours together while she wooed me over to her side. Given my druthers, Ryan, I'd rather leave as soon as we can manage. I don't like being stared at like some sort of plague-bearer.
They don't seem like much of a threat to me. We have vastly superior firepower to anything they have here. We're being very well fed. I think we should take advantage of the chance to catch up on decent meals and sleep on good clean beds.
Makes sense to me, Ryan.
And to me. I suppose I can live another day or two at the center of a plague circle.
Yehu stood in the open doorway of their quarters, the bright morning sun turning him into a sharp-edged silhouette.
Good day to you.
Hi there.
Many of us are already out at work, either in the fields or in the woods around. Some of the youngest have gone to gather branches and twigs for the fires. We need a good store against the cold of winter. Perhaps you might go and watch them.
There was a group of 15 little children, all wearing pale blue shirts and pants, most of them with the same blonde hair. As they walked along the gently swaying causeway, several of them turned to look back at the Outlanders. One or two of them made a curious gesture, with their index finger and little finger stuck straight out, aimed at Ryan and the others, while the two middle fingers were kept clenched.
They point at us with the sign to ward off the maleficent powers of the evil eye. It saddens me to see such perverse and heathen foolishness in what should be an earthly paradise.
If it were not for the word of Moses, then it would be more than fingers pointing at you.
Is that a threat?
Make of it what you will.
If Doc had been chilled last night, then there wouldn't have been a living soul left in your fucking dining room. Make of that what you want.
Is that a threat, Outlander?
Ryan stepped in close, feeling all of the old strength and power surge through his body.
No, Yehu. It isn't a threat. It's a promise.
The tension eased over breakfast. There were cereals and fruits, eggs, which also came from the Vills trading with other smaller communities, and wooden platters of breads and preserves. The hall was almost empty, with everyone already out in the fields. Dorothy came in halfway through the meal and smiled at Dean and Michael. She sat with them at the end of the table. Ryan caught Christy's eye and frowned, but there was no point in making any sort of an issue out of it.
When do you want us out of here?
Stay as long as you want. Both your two boys are interested in what we do. Why not give them another day or so to really understand what Quindley is all about?
Don't forget that Moses will want to speak to the Outlanders, Yehu.
Don't like coming and taking anything for nothing, Yehu. Sure you wouldn't like us to go and do some hunting for you?
Meat is poison. But there are vermin in the woods. If you could cut down on their numbers, then we'd be grateful to you. That would be good.
They all looked up as the doors opened and a man stumbled in. He was more ragged than anyone they'd seen, his clothing dirty, his chin unshaven. He was escorted by two of the women, each of them with a hand blaster at the waist. All three sat down at the far end of one of the long tables, ignoring the Outlanders.
Who's that?
He is soon to be selected.
Yehu finished his mug of water and wiped his mouth. He stood, obviously not wishing to pursue the conversation further.
What does selected mean? I've seen prisoners in my time. That's what he is, isn't he, Yehu?
No. He can leave if he wishes on his own terms. But he has known since birthing that he is of the people and belongs to Moses and the people.
If you stay here with us for another 3 days, then you'll see for yourself how blood returns to blood here in Arville.
I get it. The poor bastard's got his 25th birthday coming up, is that it?
Yes, that's it. Now I'm taking Dean and Michael on a tour of the Ville. The rest of you oldies can go where you please.
Watch the wood gatherers, and perhaps cull some of the carrion from the deep forest.
Sure, why not?
The five friends returned first to their quarters to wash and ready themselves for the day. Christy was in the men's part of the room, ignoring a scowl from Frank. She beckoned Ryan to the view from the window.
It's really beautiful, lover.
Yeah, long as you're under the age of 25.
I just don't get why, Frank.
Moses says it's what's needed.
Why?
You don't ask why to things Moses says.
You mean you just do his bidding and work hard, and then just when most people would be marrying and having children and settling down, you just offer yourself up? And you miss all the good things.
Frank stared at the red-haired woman as if she was totally deranged.
We have to do it. It's the way. Always was the way here in Quindley.
No point in arguing. Just like banging your head up against a brick wall.
It isn't even thought of. To argue about anything Moses... What he says is what happens. That's all.
We're going to get to meet him?
You don't...
Yeah, I remember. Talk to him, but not see him. When's that gonna happen?
Soon. But if he wants it, then it'll happen. But if Moses decides not, then it won't.
Dorothy had vanished with Michael and Dean. The rest walked over the causeway, in among the cultivated fields and allotments. Yehu himself had come to lead them, his hair untied, streaming about his shoulders, making him look like one of the children in the corn. Most of the young men and women ignored the Outlanders, though there was still some residual resistance to the sight of Doc. But the old man strode along, swinging his sword stick, smiling at everyone.
A good, good morning to you all. May the bird of happiness fly up your nose, children. Toot that bale and lift that barge, or something like that, so that Juvenile Man River can just keep rolling along.
Not one of them spoke to him, several making the same sign to avert the eye of evil.
Could you refrain from talking to them, Oldie Doc? It will make trouble. Moses said you could walk around, but he would be unhappy if there was difficulties.
And if Moses is unhappy, then everyone gets to be unhappy. That it, Yehu? Apart from there being nobody over 25, I can't say there are many black youngsters in Quindley either.
It isn't that we are prejudiced. Is that the word?
Sure is. Keep talking, Sonny. Tell me how some of your best friends are black.
No, I have no friends who are black. Moses would welcome anyone, if they are young enough. In fact, he makes a point in his teachings to tell us that we need new blood. There are not enough babies being birthed here in the Ville, but it seems that no black-faced people come here. I think there might have been one or two passing by, but none of them have stayed here. Never.
Us black folk got more sense. Land sakes, we do.
The little ones will be just away along this path here. We can walk up to the top of the hill and look down on the part of the woods where we always come to collect the broken branches for the fires.
JB looked around, the Uzi ready in his hand.
You got guards out?
There will be four with them, each carrying a long blaster. Moses ordered a doubling of care when he heard about your finding the stickies.
After Yehu spat on the path, he rubbed it in with his feet, while making the horned gesture with his fingers.
Satan's spawn.
You never had trouble with them before?
We have had small attacks by muties, but they aren't organized, and we retreat to the Ville and hold them off from there. But stickies are not well known.
They can go around in little groups, but I've known of camps of dozens, and some of them have been well run. Maybe you've been lucky.
Quindley looks after itself.
The scent of balsam grew stronger as they walked in single file through a sun-splashed path of the forest, climbing along a well-marked trail. Christy and Ryan were bringing up the rear when she suddenly stopped, pressing her fingers to her temple. Ryan's hand dropped by combat reflex down onto the butt of the Sig Sauer.
Trouble?
Could be. I just felt a flash of something.
Is it close?
Fairly close. It doesn't feel like norms. More like muties, but...
Stickies?
No. Gone again. Don't mention it to the others. I could be wrong.